Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Hi.
I also go by Anna. My life is wild.
Whoa!
This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Episode 33.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Today we talk about the Bin Laden family. I'm going to give you a quick history on who they are, why they are, and why you shouldn't assume every Bin Laden is evil.
Yeah, it's a ride. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of Syria and how it eventually became an independent nation and all the little fun battles in between.
It's actually quite informative.
Yeah, a little history lesson for y'all.
And then we're going to talk about beauty standards of Middle Eastern women and men.
Yeah.
Mostly women, but it'll apply to men as well, aka nose jobs. Bow, 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 bow,
bow, bow. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Whoa!
Hi!
Hi! It's number 33! 2 threes in a row. It's 33.
I bet you're wondering what we're still doing here.
Hold on, you're so... You're so loud right now.
Am I too loud in the headphones?
I think I need to turn you down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
That's what they all say. They all need to turn me down a little bit.
Hi. Welcome back to Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi!
I'm so sorry. I just came from lunch and I'm having a food rush to my brain.
Because I know you're all very curious, I had a much better week this week because I saw Black Panther and I would like my minority card to be reinstated. Thank you very much.
Black Panther came out like 3 weeks ago.
I said I finally saw it. That's why I want my minority card to be reinstated because it was revoked.
Stop the podcast. I'm out.
What? She left. She jumped out the window.
That's why I have a Foley artist on my free time.
That sounds just like a door.
Yeah, I don't know what that last part was.
I really disliked Wonder Woman, and I was annoyed with how many people were like, this is feminism, because I thought Black Panther was far more feminist than Wonder Woman, just as far as ideals. I mean, but this we can save it for the movie.
Wonder Woman was...
trash.
No, I mean, it wasn't trash. I didn't get that it was, like, super amazing. Like, it was cool to see, like, women fighting. Basically, like, the beginning was really cool. And then her whole, like, weird intensity in the rest of the movie where I was just kind of like... everyone's just acting like she's crazy.
No, because her main thing, whenever she walks into a room, is like, oh, she's gorgeous. That's not
crazy. Women are crazy, though, so the movie makes sense.
I mean, yeah, but, like... she's naive the whole movie to the beginning, like, the world is being explained by this, like, white guy, and she's only motivated by when he's in trouble. They always mention how beautiful she is. I don't even want to get started on the minority characters. Like, there's a guy named Chief, a Native American in Belgium, and he talks, like, no. And then there was a guy wearing a turban at one point. They're just caricatures of each other. And
I don't really remember the movie that clearly.
It was bullshit. I saw it pretty recently because it was on HBO. So... kind of clear how much I hated it, but more importantly, I thought Black Panther and the women in Black Panther were so dope and strong, and that's what feminism is. There wasn't any fan service, there wasn't any like gratuitous like sexy shots of them. They were there to be strong, and they were whole characters, not motivated solely by men.
You know what I am? I'm sexy.
Anyways, I was just had thoughts about that.
Hey y'all, I'm sexy.
Sexy Anna.
I'm sexy Anna.
Cue the sexy music.
Is that all you did this week?
I released a short.
Oh, yeah. Go watch it. What's it called?
Getting going Old.
Oh. Why did I say going home? She is going home.
She's going to a home. Yeah. She's going to a home. Just a funny thing I made 2 weeks ago with some friends.
I want more.
Yeah?
You should do more of those.
Yeah, I want to do more.
Like, follow that story more, because I'm curious what happens.
Maybe I'll do something. The actress is a friend of mine, and she's cool, and I want to work with her again, so maybe I'll do something with her. But I don't know if it's going to be the same story. But yeah, I should watch it. It's called Getting Old, and you can look it up from my Instagram or some shit.
Don't you have a website?
I do. It's ShireenLonnie.com.
Girl, you're good, there.
Plug, plug, plug. I'm an outlet.
I have a few funny stories from this week. I've had a very full week.
Yeah, you sound like you've been busy.
I've been very busy, and I've also been losing my mind, because... Sorry, super producer Sophie just gave me the weirdest look. I owe her $10,000. Anyway, that's my nervous laugh.
Nervous laugh.
Speaking of Black Panther,
yeah.
I went to the movie premiere of Gringo this week with my good friend Arden Marine. Woo! And my other good friend Kate Flannery. Flannery, sorry, you might know her as Meredith from The Office. And Arden Marine, you might know her from everything because she's the best.
Yeah,
and
she
hosts
awesome.
The Bachelor broadcast I produce. Anyway, so we went to the movie premiere of Gringo. You know, I did my thing. I held Arden's purse while she did the red carpet because I'm a good friend, okay?
Yeah.
So we go, we sit in the theater, you know, like Malcolm Gladwell's there. What a social butterfly. Malcolm Gladwell was hopping to person being like, what up, what up,
Bam.
What up? And I was like, he's putting his 10,000 hours in. Boom! Let's call it!
She's walking away. That's the sound of Brenda walking away.
I'm such a good Foley artist.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron was there, because she's in the movie. She was really cool, wearing a very sleek pantsuit. Mm. This literally turned into Anna's gossip blog. David, how do you say his name? Ola Yellowo?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can never say his name because I'm like dyslexic in that way where I can't read that word. But he played Martin Luther King in Selma. He's the main actor, star of Gringo. He's such a good actor. I was blown
away. You enjoyed
away.
The movie?
He's a really good actor.
Awesome.
He was there.
And then I saw a story where you were sitting behind.
Oh, so me, Arden, and Kate are sitting in our seats, and they come and they seat Lupita Nyong'o in front of us. Literally, she's sitting right in front of us in the theater. So, of course, we're all like, oh, damn! And then, like, I believe Charlize Theron was to the...
Did you ask her to
down
take
from
you
the
to Wakanda?
Left of me. No, I did not even say a word to her. I did follow her to the bathroom at one point. I'll get into it. I'm not that creepy. But me and Arden were just like, oh my god, this is so fucking hilarious. So we basically just proceeded to watch her throughout the movie. Like, honestly, I watched her, not really the movie.
Right. You watched her watch the movie.
She did. This movie was hilarious. She did not laugh once.
She's composed.
Like, she's such a... like, I don't know, serious actress, that she watched the movie, she put her glasses on, and then just watched the movie with a fine-tuned eye. Like, we were both just like, she is not laughing. And then we kept making jokes like, well, if she ain't laughing, I ain't laughing. Like,
yeah.
But it was so funny, because we were all just like, what are we doing right
yeah.
now? And then she happened to go to the bathroom, same time me and Arden went to the bathroom, so it was really funny, because we were like, great, now we're just stalking her. Paris Jackson was there, which I thought was really funny.
Interesting.
Because I was just like, okay. that's Michael Jackson's daughter. It's so strange.
Yeah.
Hollywood is the weirdest place on
Earth.
It's
super weird.
So we did that, and that was really, that was a good time. Movie's really good. Highly recommend you go see Gringo when it comes out. Everyone
nice.
Is a really good actor in it. I just thought the acting was so well done. The plot is kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever. But the actual... it's just everyone really brings it, and that makes the movie really enjoyable.
Nice.
Like Charlize Theron. Jesus Christ. She is so good at what she does.
Yeah, she's a profesh.
She is a really good actress.
Professional.
Excuse me, actor. There's no difference.
But speaking of movie stars and everything, did you see Trump's tweet about how the only star is him? Because the Oscar ratings are so bad. We don't have any more stars, he says, except for your president, of course. Then in parentheses, just kidding.
He's not kidding.
He just made me barf.
He's such a loser. He deserves less in life every day.
I do want to shout out some people. Should we get into some shout outs?
Yaman! Sorry, I shouldn't have done that. That was so bad. I am so sorry. I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to share your shout out? Happy International Women's Day!
We're
recording on Thursday.
I dislike that there needs to be a day that women are like, oh, yay, let's celebrate ourselves. Because how absurd would it be if there was an International Man Day? There isn't, because that's absurd and they control the status quo. Exactly. So as much as I dislike the notion of needing an International Women's Day, it is kind of nice seeing all these people recognize, like, women directors or
happy
people
International Women's Day without including all the women who voted for Trump.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. And, yes, I would agree with that.
Because we deserve a day for just being fucking legit.
Yeah.
For voting for, like, our own rights.
Yeah. But the first person I want to shout out is someone I've been a fan of. I mean, she's amazing. Sarah Silverman. She's always been,
do the drop.
It's
just us.
Those are not sound effects.
Those are, there's no
come from my mouth. But she's someone I've always looked up to as a comedian. She's always been really outspoken about having depression and just being for women's rights and everything. But recently she's been speaking out a lot about Palestine, and even on her Twitter bio, for her location tag on her Twitter bio, it says the state of Palestine. And she's been retweeting a lot of stuff about Syrian children. And even now on International Women's Day, she's retweeting all the women that have accused Donald Trump of sexual assault. And she's very outspoken and vocal in the politics scene. And she doesn't need to be. And even her show, I Love You, America. Is that what it's called? America, yes. I Love You. But she just makes an effort to stay on the right side. And even if she's Jewish, she's outspoken about being Jewish, but she's like proving that you don't have to be for Israel if you're Jewish. And I like that she's doing it so outright. Because people need to see that.
And guess what, guys? My nose is running.
What a surprise! But yeah, I would really recommend, if you guys have Twitter, just follow her on Twitter, because she's just the best. And I like her.
She's the best.
Who are you going to shout out?
I want to shout out Benjamin Ladra, which I don't know if I'm saying his name right. He's this man, if you will. He's a Swedish activist. He's 25 years old, and he is walking from Sweden to Palestine to raise awareness about human rights violations in occupied territories.
Whoa.
I think as of this week, he's in like Bulgaria or somewhere, maybe last week. I don't know the exact details, but it's a 5,000-kilometer journey. I don't know how to transfer that into miles, because I'm not good at math. But
5,000? It's like, that's probably like 12,000 miles.
Jesus! Yeah. But he's walking 30 to 50 kilometers a day.
What?
So, good for him.
Yeah.
He sleeps in a tent or a hostel. He eats canned food by campfire or shares a meal with his hosts during his journey. He holds lectures where he tells his audience what he sees on his trip and what he's experienced. He says most people have welcomed him except for a few isolated incidences. So, but fucked up. In Prague, he was detained by Israeli embassy guards because he was carrying a Palestinian flag.
What?
And pushing a trolley.
He was, just for carrying the flag, he was arrested?
Well, they thought he had like a bomb, so.
Because of the flag.
Had a trolley.
Oh.
Yes, also because of the.
That's some bullshit. That is some bullshit. I hate that so much.
Yeah. So,
Well, I hope he has a pleasant journey and gets some attention for it. I guess that's the whole point, just to raise awareness.
Yeah. So he sold everything he owns to do this journey, and I think it's so important what he's doing. He's raising awareness. He's not letting anything stop him.
Nice. Yeah. Yay! Yay, Benjamin.
Yeah. And I want to... What a world. I want to anti-shout out. I don't know if that's the correct way of saying that. To not shout out, but shout out at the same time.
This should bring to
Israel.
Yeah.
For, apparently, according to Newsweek, they are going to offer a cash reward of $8,700 to civilians to become immigration inspectors and basically, like, catch African immigrant refugees and bring them into the government so they can be deported.
You heard that right, everybody. Israeli citizens can now be fucking like civilian cops and just go around arresting their fellow man.
I know you were scared of Zionists, but now you should be scared of vigilante Zionists.
Like, what? Like, the government is just emboldening these ignorant people. Like, not all of, I mean, obviously I'm not saying all of them are ignorant, but the ones that are going to take action and be like, yeah, I'm gonna take advantage and go on a fucking power trip. Like, no, that's not how. Oh my god, that makes me enraged.
It's a lot, and I don't think that sort of power should ever be given to civilians. I think that is
no
just, I don't know how it's gonna go down. I don't know, like, the rules of it or what the, like, regulation will be. But it's called the Assistant Voluntary Program, or it's Assisted Voluntary Return Program. Yeah, but it offers refugees and asylum seekers, referred to as infiltrators, a plane ticket to their country of origin, a third nation, and a 35,000 lump sum payment, which is what they announced when they really wanted to get everyone out, because they sully the Jewish character,
like,
apparently.
Bounty hunters, essentially. Like, it's...
But if you don't accept this, you will be found and you will be deported because this is the country we all live in. Oh, well, we don't live in it.
Like,
but
can you
we're getting
imagine,
close to that.
Like imagine in the U.S., the government was like, if you want to sign up to be an immigration inspector, you can get cash out of it. It's like literally bounty hunting. You're making, yeah. like.
Man. Also, according to Al Jazeera, they pass. A law to Israel passed a law to strip residency of Jerusalem Palestinians.
Yeah, I saw that. That is some bullshit. It's
extremely racist, and guess what? Also a violation of international law. It's yes. so crazy. It's so wild. We live in a wild world.
Like it's a like. How does it get like? It's not that it's being discussed. It's already passed. Like, how does it go under the radar so much? It's already passed. Now they can strip residency of every Palestinian in Jerusalem. The catalyst was making Jerusalem the capital of Israel, which is really unfortunate. I hate you, Trump. But when you strip the residency of Palestinians of their home, they don't have any more rights in their own city. And it's just you're violating human rights and. I hate that it just goes on. No one really does anything about it. Israel is just immune to anything. So.
Oh, it's so wild. All right, so we're going to move on into our stories.
Yeah, so what do you have to talk about today?
Oh, Sheree, right. So I feel like all we do is talk about Palestine and Israel.
Well, it's a lot to talk about, but yeah.
So I kind of wanted to mix it up, give a little history about a family that you guys might not think about too often.
Okay, what family are we talking about?
Can you guess?
My family?
No, that'd be so random.
What?
It's a family I've talked about in the past, and I've read their Wikipedia quite deeply.
Oh my god, the Laddins.
I'm talking the Bin Laddins, baby! Drop the beat. I've got nothing. The Bin Laden family beat. What if we really had something made?
We start beatboxing, and it's like our new talent. No.
Right, so you might know the Bin Laden family from a very famous family member.
One in particular.
He goes by Osama. Yeah. Yeah. But here's the thing. I'm here to tell you about a family that really got fucked by a certain family member. He's like, you know,
their name.
You have that one brother who's just like a dick to everyone. Mm-hmm. And everyone all of a sudden is like, well, you have the same last name, so you must be a dick. And you're like, no! No! Not just that one shitty brother! Yeah. This motherfucker ruined it for all of us. Yeah. And you know that saying, like, this is why we can't have nice things?
Yeah.
Osama's why the Bin Ladens can't have nice things.
So,
but let me correct myself. They have a lot of nice things. They're a very rich family.
Still.
So, let me get into this.
Okay.
The Bin Laden family. So, they're a very, very wealthy family that are, like, connected to, like, the Saudi royal families and the princes and all that. And, of course, they became famous because when Osama bin Laden, the former head of Al-Qaeda, did a little thing, no, terrorism.
That rings a bell. That rings a bell.
Yes. So their most of their wealth lays, they're like represented by the Saudi bin Laden Group, which is a global oil and equity management conglomerate, and they gross about $2 billion annually.
Holy shit.
And apparently they're the largest construction firm in the world with offices in London, Dubai, Geneva.
Whoa. I did not know that.
So the Bin Laden family, in their Twitter handles, they have like Dubai airplane emoji, London airplane emoji, Geneva airplane emoji. Because you know how like people do that?
You're yeah.
just like, where are you flying to, bitch? Anyway, that's my reaction to everyone with airplane
not
emojis
New York.
In their bios, their Twitter bios. So they are from the village of Al Rubat in the Wadi Doan in the Tarim Valley Hadramut Governorate in Yemen.
Those are some words.
I don't know how to say any of those words, and I apologize. I probably just fucked them all up. So Mohammed bin Laden,
mm-hmm.
he is from the coast of southern Yemen. And he immigrated, this is the father of Osama, Mohammed bin Laden. He immigrated to Saudi Arabia, a little before World War I. And that's where he set up his construction company, which came to the attention of Abdul Aziz Abin Saud. It came to his attention, and this guy is how do you describe a Saud? A Saud is a king. Sorry, I confuse myself sometimes. He was the king of Saudi Arabia in like the 50s and 60s. And so he got the attention of Mohammed bin Laden, and because of, through all these construction projects. And then as he worked his way up, Abdul Aziz Abin Saud rewarded most of the major contracts for renovations of Mecca.
Whoa.
To Mohammed bin Laden. And if you don't know what Mecca is, it is the home of God in Saudi Arabia. That's what they mm-hmm. call it. It's the place where people take pilgrimage. They mm-hmm. go on Hajj to basically, like...
The most important place for Muslims.
Yeah. It's the most... You say foreign or holy?
The most important
place. Oh, important. Yeah, yes, it is the most important place.
Mumbled.
I don't know why I thought I heard two words that clearly did not come out of your mouth. Okay.
I have a tendency to mumble.
And you know what? There's more. And we'll get to it. Right after this break. All right.
We're back.
That's a cough to let you know we're back.
Yeah.
Okay, so as I was saying, Mohammed bin Laden was rewarded the sole contract to renovate Mecca. And that's where he made his, like, initial fortune with, like, exclusive rights to all the mosques and other religious building construction in Saudi Arabia. And basically as far as the king of Saudi Arabia's influence reached, so he could get those exclusive building contracts as well. So he also had exclusive control over restorations of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. So his corporate network was big. The man...
Yeah, those are both huge deals. Yes. Like, yeah. Jerusalem and Mecca are, like, the most important places ever, yeah.
Yes, so... honey, let me get into how many... So, this man had... So, okay. This is going to get really wild. Mohammed bin Laden, okay?
Okay.
The patriarch of the family.
Right.
He was married 22 times, and he has 54 children.
What?
And his 17th child was Osama bin Laden.
What?
And Osama bin Laden, born in Syria. Little known fact. Actually, who knows? Maybe you do know that. Yeah. So he was born to Mohammed's 11th wife, Alia Ghanem.
Holy crap.
Okay.
I do want to point out, this is not common practice for Arabs.
No, this is pretty wild. This is a rich man who could do whatever he wanted. 22 times married, 54 children. So I really want you to take that into perspective when you meet someone with the last name Bin Laden. Don't automatically assume this is like Osama's literally closest brother, so he can't be trusted. Because you know these brothers or sisters are probably just like, oh, yeah, you met that one sibling of mine who was a terrorist.
Decades apart from me.
Yeah, well, I'm one of the other wives' kids. Yeah. I don't really have much to do with that guy. So don't just assume right away if you meet a bin Laden that they're a terrorist, because that's fucked up. And it's really hard to explain yourself, you know, when you're in that situation, because you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, my dad had 22 wives! I have one of 54, God damn it!
That's insane.
Yes.
I do, it is interesting to point out, because Osama bin Laden is so well known, I think people will to see his example of a family and be like, oh, that's what Arabs are like. They marry a million wives. They want to go and die and have a million wives in heaven or whatever. But that's not common. It is an outlier. And just because you hear one crazy story does not mean that they're all crazy.
What you need to understand is this man was very prominent. So mm-hmm. He had a lot of money, so he was able to do things like this. But also, I think it was a little level of cockiness where you're like, look at my life. Like, of course I can have as many wives as I want.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's not common.
Not at all.
This is a man who had just a lot of chutzpah, if you will. I don't know if I said that. Okay, whatever. Very interesting. Osama bin Laden's mother and his father, they divorced like very quickly after Osama was born. And then his mom was given in marriage to one of the executives of Mohammed's company.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Wait,
isn't that wild?
So Osama bin Laden doesn't have any full siblings?
I'm not sure.
Well, if there's 54 of them, maybe there's one of them.
One or two, maybe. Yeah. That's but cool. Muhammad died in 1967 in an airplane crash in Saudi Arabia.
Whoa.
So his,
that's some irony.
Yes. His children, well, his son, Salim bin Laden, took over the family enterprises until his own accidental death in 1988.
A lot of accidents in this family.
Yeah, and he was one of the 54 children as well. So it's kind of wild. American and European intelligence officials, they estimate that all the relatives of the family they basically say there's basically up to 600 members of the bin Laden family. So again, holy, if you meet a bin Laden, do not assume they grew up playing with Osama.
Yeah.
Because 600 people in a bin Laden, like, that family is fam.
That is a village.
Mm-hmm.
That's a small town in the Midwest. Like, that's insane.
And here's the best part. In 1994, the bin Laden family disowned Osama. Because they were like, man, this motherfucker is so shady.
So he was like, he was 100% an outlier, if you will.
He got kicked out pretty quick after his, like, shady-ass behavior. So these bin Ladens, you know, when this 9/11 went down, they were like, this, God damn it. Which I'll get into a little later.
He was the extremist. They didn't, like, rally behind him.
Yes, and Saudi Arabia stripped him of his citizenship.
Damn.
Yeah, and
he was out for vengeance.
Yeah, well, Osama bin Laden spoke out publicly against Saudi Arabia regarding them, like, allowing U.S. troops to be based in Saudi Arabia in prep for the Gulf War in 1991. So there was already some beef. Also, I think he's just, like, sketchy.
Right.
But there's, like, groups of the family. So there's the Saudi group of the bin Ladens. There's the Syrian group of the bin Ladens. There's the Lebanese group of the bin Ladens. And there's the Egyptian group of the bin Ladens.
Okay.
And the Egyptian group, they employ about 40,000 people, and they're the country, Egypt's largest private foreign investor. Like, there's so much money in this family. It is wild. And it just takes one motherfucker to soil the name forever.
That's sad.
And so, Osama was technically a part of the Syrian group because his mom was Syrian. Am I right though? Anyway, that's my whole thing. Am I right though? Osama's the bin Ladens. Yeah, I'm gonna do
really
a quick
that name.
Because there's so many fucking family members. I'm gonna do a quick just run through. I can't even do a quick run through because there's so many fucking siblings.
There's 54 of them.
Yeah. I will, you know what? Here's what you should do. Go to the Bin Laden family Wikipedia and you can see all the family members and, like, what they do. And most of them work in, like, construction, like, contracting and finance and all that. It's wild. And they're all really rich.
Wow.
They're all, like, power brokers. Which you're just like,
well, if you're making money in Saudi Arabia, you're making money.
And there are a few sketchy ones. Like, there's so many members in this family, it's hard not to get caught up in some shit. Because, like, there was one, I believe, Mahrous bin Laden, he got caught up in, like, the Muslim Brotherhood, and he got radicalized. And there was a few other who had some issues. But for the most part, you really can't say they're bad people. Okay. Oh, well, I mean, who knows? Who knows what a real bad person is? Technically, I'm a bad person. You do not want to know what I did recently. Okay. I'm just joking.
Creeped on Lupita. Followed her home.
Followed her into the stall. I would never. That'd be too much. So let's get to 9/11. I thought this was very interesting.
Okay.
So at least 13 relatives of Osama bin Laden who lived in the U.S. during 9/11 got on a plane and left the U.S. on a charter flight
eight days
after September 11 terrorist attacks.
Wow.
According to, like, a passenger manifesto that was released, 3 years later.
Yeah, I can't blame them.
Yeah. So, now imagine that morning. So, you're like, ooh. Then you call, you know, your brother. So here are the people who are on the plane. Omar Awad bin Laden, Osama's nephew Abdallah Awad bin Laden, Shafiq bin Laden.
So there are a whole bunch of them.
Akbar Ali Mawala. They're also all like investment bankers. Yeslim bin Laden. And they're all like his half brother, Osama's half brothers. Khalid Kurdi. There have like a few more. I don't have the full list.
I mean, yeah.
They basically got on this plane and got to leave, and customs did not bother them. They were just like, get the fuck out. And that was actually, it was like a topic in Michael Moore's documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11. Like, why the fuck? What are they hiding? What's going on? And the 9/11 Commission, they said that the FBI conducted a satisfactory screening of Saudi nationals who left the United States on charter flights. The Saudi government was advised of and agreed to the FBI's requirements that passengers be identified and checked against various databases before the flights department departed. The Federal Aviation Administration representative working in the U.S. The Federal Aviation Administration representative working in the FBI Operations Center made sure that the FBI was aware of the flights of Saudi nationals and was able to screen the passengers before they were allowed to depart. So they were all able to just get their shit done, get the fuck out of the U.S., which a lot of people gave the FBI shit for because they were like, why'd you let them leave?
Right.
What are they hiding? And it's like,
they're just trying to protect themselves.
Your last name is Bin Laden, yeah, and your half-brother just fucking committed a terrorist act. You clearly are like, ew. Yeah. And most of them were in the town or in the country because they were just like doing like
business.
They were
at
like one guy was at he was at like an annual investor conference.
Of like, and it's surprising group, like, though that they didn't give him any trouble because now
I think they went through thing and they like whatever the FBI's whatever, and they're probably just like, oh well, no one talks to Osama.
Yeah.
No one is, like, these people are, like, they care about their money, they care about their families, yeah, they just want to get their work done and not get, like, fucked with because right, their last name has been Laden and because they're Arab.
Right.
Because right after 9/11 happened, U.S. was not having it.
No.
People were racist, people did not give a
beard,
fuck.
You have a beard, you're a terrorist. That's basically what happened. Go to an airport, you're a terrorist.
So it was, a really crazy time for this family because this dumbass brother of yours, it's like out here like causing problems, and you're like,
wow, that's crazy. Yeah, he was like the estranged one that fucked it all up for everyone else.
Yeah, and so I guess again, just want to say, if it may have been Laden, don't assume.
Yeah, benefit of the doubt.
That's a human. Who just happens to also be part of a 600-person family.
Yeah.
Who has no control over what some, like, half brother did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my quick history of the Osama bin Laden family. Like I said, you can go to the Wikipedia and really, like, dive deep into what every single family member does.
Yeah.
Because it's so funny how diverse and, like, just business they are. Like, they all just have, like, some wing and some business that, like, nothing to do with terrorism.
Good for them.
With a few, you know, radicalized ones sprinkled in, but
well, you have 54 of them, you know, what are you going to...
Yeah, I mean, 600.
Yeah.
Out of 600, you're going to have, like, 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 radicalized ones.
That's probability-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, it's kind of cool that they're so, I don't know, they seem like they're very involved in the economy, and they're very business-oriented, so that's kind of dope. I'm going to stay on this history journey, and I'm going to take you guys back to Syria. Not a lot of people know how Syria became independent, and that's because it's kind of convoluted and a little bit of a clusterfuck. And I do want to thank everyone that, told me I did a good job last week because I was really hard on myself. So thank you. I do want to go into the history part of it more, and I think I can be more composed because it's not very, I can, compartmentalize my emotions. But let's start, after the Roman Empire fell, we're going way back, just to give you a little bit of history. Because Syria did not become independent until the 1940s. And that's in large part because of how tumultuous it was to even become independent. So after the Roman Empire fell, Syria became part of the Byzantine Empire. And it was part of the Byzantine Empire until 637 AD, when the Islamic era of Syria came about and Muslim armies defeated the Byzantines and they took control of Syria. And this is how Islam came, like, it spread throughout the region very quickly, and Damascus became the capital of the Islamic world.
Oldest city.
Yeah. And it was the capital until it moved to Baghdad in Iraq in 750 AD. And this started this economic decline in Damascus in Syria, after it moved to, after the capital of the Islamic world moved. And then, in 1516, so the region, the Middle Eastern region for centuries was dominated by the Ottoman Empire. From 1516 to 1918, Syria was conquered by the Ottoman Empire, but this was a relatively peaceful and stable period of Syria's history. And just for a little recap, the Ottoman Empire was, it was one of the most robust and long-lasting dynasties in world history. It was Islamic-run. It was a superpower spanning the Middle East and Eastern Europe and North Africa for more than 600 years. And the chief leader is the Sultan, and he had absolute religious and political authority over his people. And a lot of Western European nations viewed the Ottomans as a threat because of just how stable they were and how well-run their empire was. And they also have had a lot of achievements in arts and science, religion at the time as well. Something really important happened before the Ottomans took power, because Arabic was made the dominant language in Syria during the Umayyad dynasty in 640 AD, when it was Islamified, basically. So Arabic became the main language, and so under the Ottomans, they were very peaceful because they respected Arabic because it was the language of the Quran. And because they were Muslims, the Ottomans, they respected Arabic and they respected everyone else, and they, and everyone that lived in Syria in particular, they were very, like, they varied religions. There were Jews, there were Assyrian Christians, Shia Muslims, Sunni Muslims, and they all lived really peacefully, and they had religious heads, and their communities were all living together and harmony. But then during World War I, the Ottomans sided with Russia and Germany, and they obviously were defeated in World War I, and so Britain and France decided to make this agreement called the Sykes-Picot Agreement, and they divided, so it was a secret accord. So Great Britain and France secretly decided to come to an agreement about which Arab lands they would take after the Ottoman Empire fell. And again, it fell in 1918 after it sided with the Central Powers, Germany and Austria and Hungary. Oh, I said Russia. I didn't mean to say Russia. But it sided with the Central Powers, and it was defeated in 1918. And so, after this, the Ottoman territories were divided between Britain, France, Greece, and Russia. And so, during that time, Syria was divided between Britain and France, and they were basically occupied by the French and the British for several years. And the French reign, it led to various uprisings and revolts in Syria, and in 1925 to 1927, Syrians united against the French occupation, and it's now known as the Great Syrian Revolt. And that lasted for a tumultuous amount of years. In 1936, France and Syria negotiated a treaty of independence. So it allowed Syria to remain independent, but gave France military and economic power. So they weren't really independent. Mm. And during World War II, yeah, it was like fake independent because France still had the power, but right. It was like, we're going to give it to you. We'll sign a treaty. This piece of paper will make you feel better about yourselves, kind of thing. But during World War II, the British and the French troops, they still occupied Syria, but after the war ended, they agreed to sign a treaty to make it an independent country in 1946. And the years immediately following that, they were increasingly unstable because there were repeated government coups against the government and people were overthrown year after year. Just a lot of political upheaval, and just because the country was, after the British and the French left, Syria was under control from the British and French, the British and the French until 1941, and then there was a lot of pressure from Syrian nationalists and the British to for the British forces and the French to evacuate. And so under that pressure, they evacuated. And in April of 1946, the country was made independent. But the Republican government that was formed was the one that was created under the French mandate. And so that's what kind of propelled all these military uprisings, because they weren't happy with the government that was in place that was put there by the French. So in 1948, Syrian forces invaded Palestine with other Arab states because they were attacking, in particular, Jewish settlements. And the purpose of this attack was to, quote, destroy all Zionists. Yeah. And the invasion purpose was the prevention of the establishment of the State of Israel. Obviously, they were not successful because the State of Israel was established in 48.
So Syria was against it.
Yeah, from the very beginning. The defeat in 1948 in Israel was a big part of the reason why Syrians joined forces with Russia. And I'm going to get into that as soon as we come back from this break. And we are back! Okay, so as I was saying, my little history lesson, the invasion and defeat in Israel by Arab states, including Syria, was a big part of why Syria, they were disgruntled, and the army officers, am I saying this right? No, God, I'm getting so confused. There are so many different coups.
The Middle East was mostly made out of coups.
Yeah, it really was. But that defeat in Israel was one of the first it was a big reason why the United Arab Republic was broken up, and the independent Syrian Republic was formed. There are just so many different times they renamed themselves. It's just like, come on. Okay, so I mentioned the United Arab Republic, and I didn't mention it before, but the United Arab Republic was formed in 1958, and what that means, Syria and Egypt decided to join forces, and they became the United Arab Republic in 1958. But the union split after only, 3 years in 1961. And then this brought even more upheaval. So basically, the 1960s were extremely tumultuous, and coup after coup happened. And then in 1963, the Arab Socialist Ba'ath Party, B-A-A-T-H, it was very active at the Middle East, and it seized power of Syria in a coup known as the Ba'ath Revolution. And then, fast forward to 67, there was the Six-Day War. Israel seized the Golan Heights, which is a rocky place in southwestern Syria, and the conflict over this area is still ongoing, and it's continued for decades. And then in 1970, Hafez al-Assad, the father of Bashar al-Assad, who's the current quote-unquote president of Syria, he was the Syrian Minister of Defense. He overthrew the de facto leader of Syria in 1970, and he remained in power for 30 years until his death in 2000. It's interesting because in early 1976, Syria entered Lebanon, and it began the 30-year Syrian occupation in Syria. So Hafez al-Assad became president in 1970, and in 1976, they began this 30-year military occupation in Lebanon. They still have some forces in Lebanon. And then in the 70s, there was an Islamist uprising by the Muslim Brotherhood that was aimed at the government. So Islamists attacked civilians and off-duty military personnel, and this led to security forces to kill civilians in retaliation. And the uprising had reached the climax in 1982 in the Hama massacre. My mom was from Hama. It's reported that 10,000 to 40,000 people were killed by regular Syrian army troops. So the Syrian army and the military was always killing their people, in retaliation from other groups. And I think that kind of sheds light on just why it's so unstable now. It's because it's barely been a century since it gained its independence, and I think it's just been so tumultuous over there. But Hafez al-Assad also brought in a major shift in relations to other Arab states in the Western world. Syria participated in the U.S.-led Gulf War against Saddam Hussein, and it participated in the Madrid Conference of 1991. And During the 1990s, Syria engaged in negotiations with Israel, and these negotiations failed, and there have been no further direct Syrian-Israeli talks since Hafez al-Assad's meeting with President Bill Clinton in Geneva in March 2000.
So why since do you think 2000, that is? Just the Assads were just like, you know what, this might not be worth our time.
Yeah, I think they were interested in playing nice. You know, they tried it out, and they were like, they made an effort to be more modern, and then they went back to their shell. And then television was introduced to Syria in 1960, which is a little later than the rest of the world. Because Syria and Egypt had adopted, when they were part of the United Arab Republic, television was brought in. It was broadcast in black and white until 76. And this is more just like the media side that I wanted to just like give a shout out to, because Syrian soap operas have been considerable in the, like, they have very big market value in the Eastern Arab world, and even during like the Ramadan,
most Middle Eastern countries still really, really love soap operas.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
They love that, like, weird kind of like
the dramatic, fate. Like,
yeah, like,
like the music and the drama and the family, like,
soft
fights.
Lens.
Yeah. So Syria is very big in the entertainment world, and nearly all, this is very important, because nearly all of Syria's media outlets are state-owned, and the Ba'ath Party, which I brought up earlier, it still controls nearly all the newspapers. The authorities operate several intelligence agencies. Among them is the Shubat, the Makhnabad, which is like a news outlet. So it's very, the government operates and controls a lot of the media. And since the Syrian civil war that's happening now, many of Syria's artists, poets, writers, and activists, they've remained incarcerated, including a very famous cartoonist, Akram Baslam. So I hope that gives you a little bit of history just to understand why it's so tumultuous over there, because it also kind of infuriates me that the British and the French were just like, now that the Ottoman Empire has fallen, let's just divvy this up amongst us and see what happens.
That's
and
the way, like, they do it, though.
Yeah.
And colonization, that's how you do it.
It's so absurd. And you make that region so unstable because of your fucking selfishness. And it's a beautiful fucking place. It's just like this beautiful land. It's like high mountains and deserts, and so many ethnic groups live there. And, yeah, I just wanted you guys to have a little bit of background on it. There are so many other things that happened in the last century. But if you guys want to learn about it, we'll have some links on our the footnotes section of our website that you can check out. But yeah, I hope that was informative. A little history lesson.
It was.
Yeah, we had a little history episode today.
I forgot to do my forever problematic theory that indirectly God funded 9/11.
Indirectly?
Because Mohammed bin Laden's father had sole Mohammed bin Laden, the father of Osama bin Laden, had sole contract to renovate the home of God, Mecca.
Oh shit.
So indirectly that money funneled down to Osama. And indirectly, Osama did 9/11. Indirectly, Osama did. Indirectly, Osama did 9/11. What I meant to say is indirectly, God paid for 9/11. Don't at me, please, because I know how problematic of a theory that is. But I just think it's so funny.
That's a good little tidbit, you know? That's some trivia knowledge.
Next time you're at a dinner party, bring that one up and watch every face look at you like, girl, shut your goddamn mouth. Because I've said that places. When I told my father, he told me never to repeat that, let alone on a podcast.
I know. I forgot to mention something. So on the Wikipedia page, when you look up how Syria became independent, there is a picture of Syrian rebels in Ghouta during the Great Syrian Revolt against the French colonizers.
Ghouta? Ghouta, like the cheese.
Ghouta. Did I say Ghouta?
You just said Ghouta.
Someone's hungry. No. No, Ghouta. Mm-hmm. So in 1920... there were rebels in Ghouta fighting. I should just call it Ghouta. I have to practice my enunciation.
My enunciation is
very poor. There's a great Syrian revolt against the French colonizers in 1920, and there's a picture of the Syrian rebels in Ghouta. And considering what's going on right now in Ghouta, it's just kind of beautiful to see that they've always just been it's a country of fighters. Like, they're not gonna, they won't take no for an answer. And you should just look at the photos on this page. I was actually pretty, touched, I guess. And, yeah. And, you know, the history website, history.com, super great.
Damn, who owns that?
I don't know, actually. PBS? I don't know.
I have a funny story about domains, if you want to hear it.
Okay.
Which I should have done it in my week, this past week.
Okay, domains.
But real quick, when you say Guta, it reminds me of Gouda, and that reminds me of that E40 song, Gouda, which is about money, which is like cheese,
there's
Gouda.
There's an E40 song called Gouda?
Mm-hmm.
About money? I thought money was bread. I thought it was like dough. Now it's cheese, too?
E40 calls it Gouda.
Big cheese. Big money.
I'm just saying, and so anytime I low-key, like, read articles about that, I think about E40.
Oh,
so
man.
Weird? Just in the back of my mind, I'm like,
forever, never forget. Never forget.
Gouda. But that's at history.com. So this week, I produce a Bachelor podcast. Mm-hmm. I talk about it all the fucking time. We had a bit of a mishap with a certain website company who cannot be named because I'll get in trouble if I say their name. I got in trouble because they sponsor one of the shows I produce, and I already got in trouble for talking shit about them.
Oh.
So,
tell me more when this is over.
Yeah. So they fucked up. We tried to make a website, rosepodcast.com.
Okay.
And they fucked up. They didn't actually buy the domain for us. And so someone else bought it out from underneath us. It was a whole thing. So I made a whole, like, 90-page website, which now I have to remake. Yeah.
What?
It's some hell shit. So, like, in our angst, we were, like, looking up other ways to, like, other URLs and domain names. And just out of madness, me and Arden, the woman who hosts my podcast, who I went to the Gringo premiere with, found rosepodcast.vodka.
Ooh.
So we bought it. So now our website is rosepodcast.vodka.
That's pretty
hilarious.
Because
in our absolute madness, we were like, fuck it. This is what it's led to.
I didn't even know .vodka was an option.
Oh, there, you can do anything.
Ethnicallyambiguous.vodka?
We could do ethnicallyambiguous.republican if we wanted to, just to be insane. We could do .mom. We could do .wine. We could do .sexy. Like,
we
can do anything.
The possibilities are endless.
Yeah,
no, they're so big.
It's
right now.
Wild. Like, we could have been like ethnicallyambiguouspod.cheese. .gouda.
Wow.
No, it's really funny. And we lost our minds. So we bought it. So now we're at rosepodcast.vodka.
Vodka!
Because it was just so absurd that we were like, you know what? Fuck it. We're so tired of all this shit. Like, we were both just exasperated.
Yeah.
So
that's what happens.
Exasperation. History.vodka, baby. Here we come. We looked up horny.republican. It's available.
What? So, read that one now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that history lesson.
Yes.
I just thought, I don't know, even me, like, there was some stuff about Syria that I didn't know about, and I think understanding it a little bit more is important to just...
To caring.
Yeah, and just understanding why it's so... why there's so much political and social upheaval is because it's been years in the making, and...
That's, like, literally every country in the Middle East, except for, like, Saudi Arabia, cannot catch a break.
Yeah.
Because, like, a foreign entity is deciding they, like, need a stake in it.
Put their nose somewhere where it doesn't belong. But, yeah.
I just wish, you know, like, a country would do that to America.
I know. How mad would America be, right? If that happened?
Maybe, we wouldn't care at all.
Maybe they wouldn't care at all. Maybe.
Like, maybe we would act like it's not a big deal and just let it continue.
Can you imagine that if a country, like, influenced... Like, who our president was?
Yeah,
like, the leader of this country?
That
would be insane. Ugh. That would be insane. And then we just didn't do anything about it. Like, we didn't give a shit.
Yeah,
that
would be upset.
And the president was still in power. We didn't give him any... there was no repercussions for his actions.
Thank God that didn't happen here. And if no one got that, and we're going to get a bad review about it, we're talking about Russia! Russia's involved!
It's called sarcasm, y'all! It's called sarcasm!
Someone gave us a bad review and said we're all like inside jokes.
Yeah, they're like, these two clearly have inside jokes. And I'm like, do we though?
We're just always sitting here doing our inside jokes.
Yeah. We got a couple of nice emails again. That was really nice. Thank you guys for sending us so many nice things. It makes me warm inside.
So for our quick personnel section, sex cells. Well, we're gonna talk about
body issues, I guess.
Body modification in Middle Eastern context.
Like beauty standards, we'll say. Yes. Beauty standards. So, if you guys are Middle Eastern, Persian, even Jewish, nose jobs are probably considered like a rite of passage. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, how many times has someone looked at you or me and they've been like, oh, you don't even need a nose job.
Oh my God.
You have a good nose. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, what is that even? You don't need one either, man.
When I go to Iran, my cousins are so quick to tell me how lucky I am that I don't need a blow job. Damn it, a nose job.
But that too.
Yeah. I could use a blow job. They literally every fucking time, yeah, they're just like, oh, look at your life.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Yeah. Every time I'm like looking at my nose in the mirror, like, what do you, what? And the cousin who says it a lot actually recently got a nose job.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have family members that have nose jobs, and I've seen her confidence grow exponentially. It was something that really bothered her. So I'm not against plastic surgery because I've seen how beneficial it can be for someone, and she's really blossomed into someone that she wants to be. But on the other hand, it's so superficial sometimes. Just the culture around it is right. Just you feel like you almost have to do it.
I remember when I was in middle school, my dad literally said, "When you want a nose job, let me know."
Really? My parents were not into that.
Wait, what? And he said, I remember him saying it in such casual passing, mm-hmm, that I was just like, wait, I'm sorry, what did you just say?
Yeah.
Like, it was so weird.
We had a lot of family friends like that, where, like, as soon as they hit high school, as soon as they hit 18, nose job. Then they go to college, and no one knows them there, and they can just start over with their, yeah, new nose. Yeah.
It's crazy. Also, other thing I want to talk about is, like, tattooing, like, eyeliner on them. Like, a lot of my cousins have tatted eyeliner.
Whoa.
Which actually blows my mind.
I thought that was kind of out of style, but I'm surprised it's still going on.
No, in the Middle East, it's living strong. Like, wow. It's a real thing, right? I would be in Iran, and I'd be just thinking, damn, my cousins just get up and just do their makeup every day. And then one day, my cousin was like, hell no, this shit is tattooed on, girl. Like, I don't do this.
It's kind of like, maybe it's kind of like microblading. You know, because
microblading?
Like,
what's that?
Microblading is when it's like a new form, it's semi-new, like the past couple of years. It's like tattooing your eyebrows, but each strand individually, not just a block of color. I personally would love to get mine microbladed. Can we set up a fund, everybody?
I actually have.
Shireen's microblading fund. Donate to, I'll give you my PayPal at the end of this.
I have a cousin who has her eyebrows tattooed on,
mm-hmm,
which I don't even think twice about anymore.
That's pretty standard.
When I'm in Iran, I don't think twice about half the crazy things they do because I get very immersed in it.
Yeah.
So like when my cousin was like, oh yeah, I have my tattoos, my eyebrows tattooed, mm-hmm, on.
It's just normal.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like if you want to compare it to another culture, I would say Korea and their double eyelid surgery, or just like Asian culture in particular, yeah, where it's very prominent in South Korea because getting a double eyelid surgery is considered very like a quick fix up, like in the doctor, like you're in, you're out. It's just like, or are you fixing your nose bridge? Not fixing, mm-hmm, it, like not that it was broken, but like, in their opinion, improving it.
It's actually a very interesting thing because I can see how someone might be like, wow, that's so high maintenance. And then when you think about it, it's not. It's the opposite because now you don't even have, yeah, to think about it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just on your face.
I want to get my eyebrows done so bad, but I'm too.
You want to get the micro, that's like basically tattoo it on.
It's like semi-permanent last couple years. I was about to do it and then I got scared because.
Really?
She said that my skin was like oily and it might turn purple. Like, and I was like,
That's a real thing?
Yeah. And I mean, like, okay, you guys, in my photos, you guys may think I have eyebrows. And I do try very hard every day. I spend a lot of time on my eyebrows, but they're sparse, man. This is all, if I don't have a pencil, if eyebrow pencils were not invented, I would not have nice brows. That's like my biggest, I have hair everywhere else. I am so hairy, but for whatever reason, my eyebrows, no, actually, no, I know the reason. I shaved them off in sixth grade because I was.
You think that's why?
I don't know, man.
But do your sisters have the same eyebrow situation?
No, they have great brows. That's my mom has thin eyebrows. Huh. Me and my mom have thin eyebrows. So I fill them in every day.
It's the bane of my existence as a Middle Eastern girl. When I learned that you were filling them in, I never could tell.
That's a very big compliment for me because I think.
I think I came to your house early in the morning and you were like, oh, sorry, I haven't put my eyebrows on yet. Something like that. I don't know if that was the exact. Oh, sorry, I haven't put my eyebrows on yet.
That sounds like something I would say.
And I was like, oh, I fucking for real had no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
It's something I wish I had eyebrows. I just don't. And I think it's because Middle Eastern brows are so beautiful and thick and full. I just want those. But instead I have hair everywhere else, so don't worry about
sometimes
it.
Sometimes too thick. Hi, I'm Anna. And I have thick as shit eyebrows.
I love your eyebrows. I love your eyebrows.
I have to maintain them a lot, though. Mm. And I actually haven't had them threaded in a while, so they're a little
kind of all shape. Over. You just have a naturally good shape.
Well, I had it, the shape perfected. And so now I just do only cleanup. But I don't fuck so with the shape at all.
So you're a threader. Like, you go to get threaded.
Yes. I have an eyebrow specialist. My eyebrow is only touched by one woman.
Wow.
And she has taught me since, I want to say I was 18. I think on my 18th birthday, she hooked
the
it
same
up.
Same woman.
Mom, yeah. My mom got me her when I was 18.
Damn.
It's almost 10 years I've been seeing her now. So she is the one woman who has always, she taught me how to pluck to keep my arch and not fuck it up.
Wow.
Because obviously I don't thread them myself. That would be absurd. She taught me, like, how to grow them, how to maintain them, and, like, how to not overpluck them in, like, madness.
Wow.
And, like, what to do and how to hold their shape.
Wow.
And that's...
My little sister used to be really into threading. I think she stopped after a couple years, but she used to get threaded consistently. And then she grew out her brows, and now it's all trending, thick eyebrows. But.
You know, when thick eyebrows started trending, I was like, oh, thank God. Oh, Jesus, thank God.
I love thick eyebrows. I just wish I had them naturally. Like, you don't understand. Like, I just want to shower and have still a structure to my face. You know, that would be nice. Oh, well. But I guess, like, noses. So I think it's something that really bothers me. I don't want to get into too much in the Kardashian world, but they've had a lot of work done, and they make it seem like they haven't, and that merely bothers me because their standard of beauty, because I understand, so the Kardashians are half Armenian, and if you look at Kim before she got any work done, she looked ethnic, you know, and now everyone just looks like the same Kim Kardashian person because they always get their nose smaller and their eyes lifted, and she had her whole like hairline redone or some shit. Like,
I think she just had her baby hairs lasered off.
Yeah, that's insane though. That's like meticulous shit.
That's actually something we talked about in Daily Zeitgeist today. Like hair removal. You shouldn't have to remove all your hair.
Yeah.
You should be able to have your armpits, I mean, legs, armpits.
Whatever, like, makes you comfortable, really. I think both sides are feminist, you know? Like, just doing whatever you want for your purpose.
Like, I just feel so many people bring up laser hair removal to me, and I just don't think I'll ever do that, because I don't think I don't care enough.
I'll be honest, I do laser hair removal, and I've done it before.
Where do you
do it? It's really, my legs, I have bad skin on my legs, I get a lot of ingrowns, and like bumpy, razor burn stuff, and after I did laser, my skin improved dramatically, like dramatically, okay. So it really helped my skin, and it's just like less upkeep or whatever. So, as someone that grew up being adverse to body hair, laser hair removal was pretty cool. Because it wasn't...
How many times did you do it?
Several.
Okay, because someone told me that they turn the thing down so you have to do it more so you pay more.
No.
I don't know. That's just a rumor.
I think maybe that's like a shady place. Yeah. I'm sure there are places like that, but I think in general, if you're a hairy brown girl, laser hair removal really helps you out. It's not like it's all gone forever, but it makes the hair finer. It makes it easier to manage.
I just never really could wrap my mind around it.
Yeah.
I just don't like the idea of a laser zapping my, like, coochie area. Something weird about it.
I don't know. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I'm into anything that makes it easier for me to live my day. Yeah.
That is interesting.
But at least we have good noses.
Yeah. I was always like, my mom would get her whole face threaded, and I'd be like,
really?
You really don't need to do that. Like, you just don't.
But at the same time, some women are hairier than others, and maybe it makes them self-conscious, you know?
It's true, but it just seems like, my mom would always say, beauty is pain, which it fucking is. Threading
it
is pain.
It is. Waxing, threading, come on.
Yeah. Like, that all, those, I don't know, that whole standard always drove me crazy. Like, I should just live my hairy-ass life. Only thing I really care about is my eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
That is all I care about.
Well, so do I, but you have, it makes me annoyed that I'm so hairy everywhere else and not my brows.
That is pretty weird.
It's like, they're not the thinnest brows, but they're just sparse and they're not even at all. Like, my left eyebrow is so much thicker.
Do you feel like they can be unpredictable?
Yeah, I woke up the other day and I don't even have that much to begin with, but you know when you wake up and they're just like, they're facing
they're
different directions,
like,
and they hurt?
Yeah.
Like, and you have to take them out because they just like, one is facing like, straight the fuck up, and you're just like, well, you can't keep you, so you have to get rid of it.
Well, you're out of here.
Yeah. But yeah, nose jobs are pretty crazy for me. And like, just to think about how prominent they are in every culture, not just Middle Eastern culture, like the prominent Asian culture and Jewish culture, and now even white culture. Like, it's like a, your nose makes up so much of your face. It should become very important to have a very chiseled nose.
I don't really know what a good nose is. Like, when family members say, like, oh,
I don't like that terminology. Yeah.
What is that? Like, because I look at my nose and I think, I mean, it's a nose, yeah, but I wouldn't say it's, like, the most perfect nose. Like, hey, should I get a nose job? You know, like, I don't know. Like,
yeah. When they say good, it's almost like, oh, it's closer to the standard of beauty than the average Arab, in their opinion. I don't think anyone needs nose job. It's more wanting one.
Do people get it mostly because of a bump, like on the bridge of your nose? Like, is that the idea?
I think so. I think it's part of it. 'Cause I don't
know what constitutes a good nose.
Okay, so I talked about this several episodes ago. So Lawrence of Arabia has a character that is played by a white guy, but he's supposed to be Arab. And they give him the biggest fake nose.
And is that like the it's like a Middle bird Eastern nose?
It's like a beak. It's like a beak nose. And I think some stereotypes about Arabs are always depicted with a big nose. Hmm. Always. And I think there's a lot of Jewish stereotypes like that too. When you see an Arab cartoonized or like in a comic or anything, they are probably hairy, they have a big nose, and maybe even a turban on. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I think there are some stereotypes that are, like with Asians and small eyes, like there are some stereotypes that are exaggerated to the point of characterization. And it doesn't benefit, you know what I mean? Like, so the same reason, like, I remember my sister had an Asian friend, and we went to their house, and her mom really loved she said our noses were really beautiful because they had bridges. And for Asians, like a lot of Asian communities, they dislike that their nose bridge is flat. But that doesn't mean their nose is better or worse. So the idea of having a good nose really makes me mad because it's like, we all have, if it works and it has air coming out of it, it's a good nose. You know what I mean? So the idea of bad nose is just
I just Googled Middle Eastern nose jobs.
Man.
And it seems that the most common thing is the bump on the nose that they have removed.
Yeah.
Based on my understanding of all these nose job images. They want to get rid of the bump and kind of have a little more.
But that's also the standard of Western beauty. The idea that there's a straight nose bridge is very Western beauty. A straight raised nose bridge. It's not Asian. It's not Arab. It's not Indian. It's fucking Westernized beauty. And that's because that's what the standard of beauty is for. It's for Western white people. And that's what we think is beautiful. Not we, me and Anna, but we as the general population.
There's also a wide variety of Middle Eastern. Like, there's old men, old women, young women, young men. It's pretty wild.
It's crazy.
So many Middle Easterners out here getting nose jobs.
Yeah.
And there's one link to a place in Beverly Hills. So, of course, the Middle Easterners in Beverly We're Hills are being like, here. Let me get you this nose job.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I hope you guys enjoyed that.
I think we're going to go get nose jobs after this. We're going to switch noses and have mine removed, put on Shireen's face, and I'm going to get Shireen's put on my face.
Yeah, technology.
So next time you see
us. If Barbara Streisand can get her dogs cloned twice, I can get Anna's nose on my face.
$50,000 to clone a dog.
Fuck that bitch. God.
Barbara is the most interesting person alive. Okay, pro-Israel, though, unfortunately.
What did I say? I said fuck that bitch.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Happy Monday. Also, follow us on Twitter at Ethnically
AMB.
Follow us on Instagram at Ethnically AmBig. AMBIG. Go to our website you can listen to the episodes there, or you can see our footnotes there at ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. Yeah. Wish it was .vodka, but it is not.
Maybe soon.
Yeah. Rate and review. Give us 5 stars, please. Anything helps.
5
positive
stars.
Positive reviews, baby.
Give us 5 stars on iTunes or your podcast app. Show us some love.
You can follow us individually on Twitter. You can follow me at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh. Yes, my name is technically Anna, but I've been gaslighted for so long that I respond to Anna and introduce myself as Anna. I don't know why, but I will respond to both Anna and Anna and not even think twice about it. Like, I don't know
anything.
I'm going
to start calling you Anna more often.
A lot of people do call me Anna, and I just don't... I honestly don't think twice. Like, sometimes my parents call me Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been so just mind-fucked in America that we don't even know what my name is anymore. Can you believe that happened? It just really kind of occurred to me that I was like, wait, my name is Anna. Why do I keep saying Anna?
I think it's just the Western version of your name. Like, to make it more... So people aren't like, oh, interesting. Like,
but I mean, I know, like, white Annas, too. It's just, like, a thing. I don't think twice about it. I'll respond to either or. I'm not saying you have to call me either or. I just... Yeah.
It's pretty mind-boggling.
I'm realizing that it's actually a thing that I just never talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I am Anna, but
you are Anna.
Also go by Anna, and I don't think twice about it when I'm introducing myself as Anna. It's pretty surreal. I don't know where I am right now.
If you want to follow me, I am on Instagram at Shirohero, SHEERO HERO. And then Twitter, I'm Shereen Y, SHEERENWHY. I'm pining for that Shirohero handle on Twitter. It's been escaping me for years.
It's not there?
It's just taken by this girl that doesn't fucking have a Twitter anymore.
Lame.
I know. But yeah, watch my little short that I made. Hopefully it'll make you laugh. Yeah. So until next time.
Maybe we'll put in the footnotes. Short. So then you can go look at information and watch Shereen Short at the same time.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Also, you just did another podcast recently.
Oh, yeah. I was a guest last... It came out last week. Did it come out? No. It came out on Tuesday. Sorry, my days are all confused. But I was a guest on New Player Has Joined. It's a video game podcast. And I'm a big lover of video games. And I particularly in that episode talked about Assassin's Creed, the first game, and how it's set in Syria. And it deals a lot with Syrian history and architecture. And it's really beautiful, actually, as a game and its depiction of Syria. It's a great little young show. It's maybe a handful of episodes, maybe under 20, I think, for sure. And it's a really fun for all my nerds out there. Let's just unite and listen to this video game podcast together.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do it. Listen to Shay Ray.
Yeah.
That's her video game name. Just kidding. I don't know anything. Shereen, you gonna bite that ass?
I bite that ass.